This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Rani Osnat of Aqua Security.
Hi, Ian. Well, Aqua Security is a startup, 3-year-old company that specializes in container security and cloud-native application security. This whole space of Docker containers, Kubernetes, serverless functions, and so forth.
We've had this massive explosion of containers. Everywhere you look, it's container this, container that. The whole world is being refactored into a container. What's missing from the conversation is security, and it seems like we're just repeating virtual machines and every other major shift we've had in the industry. Where do we go to fix this?
First of all, regarding adoption numbers and where we are in the market, I think we're still at a very early stage. Yes, there are some statistics that show that 80% of Fortune 500 use containers or something like that. And that's true, probably, maybe even 90%. But how do they use containers? Where do they use containers? They use them somewhere. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that everything has moved to containers, nor will it, I think. But yes, substantial amounts of workloads will move to containers over the next few years, and we need to be ready. And you're right in the sense that adoption of these technologies always precedes security. Security always comes afterwards. We see it with our customers as well, although I would say that there are a lot of forward-looking organizations that try to do security from the beginning, before they went into production and not after. I think what's substantially different from VMs in our world is that containers actually change the architecture and the deployment mechanism of applications. Unlike VMs that were basically virtual servers, containers virtualize bits of applications. And if you create today a greenfield application, then it is a microservices application, or at least a mini services application. So it's cut up into small pieces that are loosely coupled, packaged into containers, and are networked in a microservices environment. This makes our life easier. Why? Because we can relate to these smaller portions of the application, understand their intended use. They're simpler to understand. We start treating them already in the development pipeline, so we don't apply security as an afterthought in the runtime environment. We don't wait for the application to be deployed and then think, oh, what do we have here? How do we secure that? But rather, we integrate into the CI pipeline, the continuous integration pipeline, where developers operate, and we provide them feedback within their own environment so they can fix whatever needs fixing according to the policy of what is acceptable risk in the organization. Therein lies one of the big differences, which is that we co-opt developers to do security, but without expecting them to be security experts, because they're not and they never will be.
There's about a dozen things I can take out of that statement. But let's start with one of the most basic problems we have here. We've gone through the initial, here's a container. It's different from VM phase. People have played with it. They may only have it in test at the moment. But if they're not applying basic security now in test, no matter how many nice words we say and how many great tools we deliver, we know historically those types of containers will find their way into production. They'll be insecure and we'll be back to the whole thing of chasing security. How do we very quickly get control, even with those people who are just playing with containers?
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, you have to remember that containers often go hand in hand with DevOps environments. And one of the principles of DevOps is that there should be a development to production parity. The production environment should be the exact same environment that you're developing in. In a way, that makes our life easier because we can apply things in development and know that they will work in production. But there is some organizational challenge for sure in educating people to integrate security into their processes. Because of automation, the automation that's built into this process, the CI tools, for example, things like Jenkins, CircleCI, GitLab, and so forth, the infrastructure for automation is already there. The process for automation is already there. All you have to do is integrate security into that process as a necessary step. And the slightly trickier part is establishing this governance model where it's not the cat guarding the cream. So it's not the developers themselves who decide what is acceptable risk or not, but that is dictated by the security team while the developers themselves apply it. So that's one area that we can easily implement. The other one is that there are a lot of open source tools, including ones that we provide at Aqua, like the Aqua Microscanner, for example, which is a free tool that people can use to scan Docker images during build. It can fail the build if it doesn't meet the criteria, and it can also be integrated as a Jenkins plugin. That is an example of something that you can do in advance. It doesn't cost you anything. It's easy to use. It's easy to automate and integrate, and there's really absolutely no excuse not to do it.
One of the things we saw at KubeSec a few weeks ago was the idea that we actually take our security and we build that security into the frameworks, and then we push that out to developers. What it does is it hides that security from them, but we allow additional tools to be added depending upon the type of project. If it's a highly secure project, we can put a lot on top. If it's a generic project, we already have a baseline. How quickly do you think adoption will come of that? Because it's a big shift to where security starts.
The key here is you need to be strict on policy, but liberal on tooling. The fact is that if you're in a large organization, you're going to have multiple development teams. They're going to move at different speeds. They're going to like different tools, program in different languages, and so forth. You can't enforce standardization across the board on everything. It just won't work. Likewise, we need to adjust the mindset of security being an enabler and not an obstacle. Developers tend to think of security as something that prevents them from being effective or efficient or speedy. That has to go out the window. And again, automation here is key. If you can't automate these things, you'll never be able to meet the speeds at which these applications are being deployed and updated. We have customers who manufacture or update tens of thousands of Docker images per week. Why? Because they're in a fully CI/CD environment. Every time a developer commits code, it automatically triggers a build. We have a new image, an updated image. Every developer does that at least once a day. Thousands of developers, many thousands of commits and builds. You have to adapt yourself to that environment, and you have to put the appropriate tests and appropriate measures at the right stages. You cannot, for example, enforce a very strict policy on vulnerability severity levels in development. You can do that later in deployment because you have to give people a chance to fix. It has to be sensible. It has to make sense. That's the approach that we're trying to take and really segregate duties in a way that allows security to have control and visibility, but provide the automation and interface to the developers that allows them to actually do a lot of the grunt work of security, but as part of their work, without learning additional skills or using external tools.
Unlike VMs, which were designed to be an operating system plus something, that might be an application, it might be a suite of applications, it could be a lorry load of data. Containers started off life with a lot of people talking about them being simply microservice. They could be 2 to 4 lines of code, they could be a lot bigger. One of the promises of that was really to fulfill what we've talked about for 30 years, which was object orientation. The fact that we'd have all these components, we create them once, we make them secure, and then we just connect them together. The reality on the ground is becoming very different very quickly. We're not seeing lots of little pieces that people are clicking together. We're starting to see people creating entire applications, if not suites of applications in some cases, inside the containers and putting all the data in with them. Without being too purist, how do we separate out the goal of this, which is light, adaptive, easy to orchestrate, easy to manage, from really just another way of recreating what we've always done in IT?
There's a promise and then there's reality. I think that most of what we're seeing, and this is also a recommendation to organizations who are just starting out with containers, is to start fresh. Don't try and take your biggest, most complicated application and port that to containers. But start with something small, something that is truly cloud native that you can now write from scratch, and start there because that'll help you learn the right processes, the right practices to use. With the larger applications, and I think we've heard about customers talking about things like 20 gigabyte containers and so forth, obviously this should be avoided. If your entire purpose in containerization is to move things from on-prem to the cloud and make things a bit more transportable, fine. But you're really only getting 20% of the benefit of using containers. Usually, when people try to, quote-unquote, lift and shift applications into containers, there has to be at least some refactoring. You don't need to go all crazy Netflix-type Death Star diagram of 10,000 microservices. Nobody does that except Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter. But you can take a normal N-tier application that you have today, split it up into 30, 40 services. The benefit will be enormous in terms of scale, in terms of updatability, and so forth if you do it right. Yes, there is some burden here on architects to refactor and re-architect applications, and that has to be done if you want to reap the benefits.
One of the key things you said was re-architect these applications. We still have a significant mindset that seems to think that what we were doing on premises can be replicated in the cloud. People are taking a long time to refactor their code, to realize that refactoring requires a re-architecture because of the design of the cloud. We're now moving towards multi-clouds, where actually we're going to see microservices as part of our application, not in one place, but in 5, 10, 15 places potentially. That creates a massive stress on how we link it together if we don't re-architect. How is that conversation going with re-architecture? Because if I'm honest, I hear a lot from stages. I hear very little when I come across users and talk to them.
Yeah, it's actually even more complicated than you described because the tool set is expanding. So you have what is now considered traditional containers, containers running on VMs. You also have these serverless containers like AWS Fargate or ACI from Azure. You have serverless functions, Lambda, etc. At reInvent, AWS announced something called Firecracker, which is even yet a new modality for running serverless functions and containers. You have all these options, and you really need to select them in a way that will optimize your application for performance, for latency, for all these things. And then there are other things that you need to connect to, like maybe legacy systems, persistent storage, and so forth. There has to be some thought given to that. It doesn't work. If you architect or create an application that runs on a VM locally today and you just put it on Amazon, there's still a lot of stuff you need to do to configure the load balancers, the port forwarding, the firewalls, all those things. It's never zero effort. But if you do architect a cloud-native application in a cloud-native way, i.e., having the dependencies clearly separated, open through APIs, usually RESTful APIs. If you do that right, then things truly are portable. We have customers today that have a framework, which is corporate-wide, and these are not small companies, where different teams can onboard themselves to use the container framework of the company. They can use whatever tool they want for development and pipeline management, CI, and so forth. But once they committed to an application to staging, it all goes into one registry deployed through specific templates, and they can, through a push-button process, literally, it's a self-service system, decide whether this application that they're now deploying will be deployed on a private cloud infrastructure, Amazon, Azure, or Google. And they can move them whenever they want. So it does work if you do it right.
I like that phrase, does work if you do it right. If only. One of the big challenges, though, here for organizations is that we're not talking anymore about a security team setting rules or an operations team worrying about deployment. We're so spread out in what we're doing that we have to have that level of automation, but we also have to have that engagement with all those parties. Operations will know, for example, what their risk factors are. Security will see new risks coming down the line and can start to write and automate code for it. But those are things that we could have been doing for more than 20 years but haven't. How will containers change that? Will containers change that?
I think they are, and I think they already are changing that. Not everywhere, not always successfully, but there's definitely a movement afoot. You can call it DevSecOps, or you can call it whatever else you want, but the reality is, and there isn't one model that works. It really depends on the organizational culture. But you can either have security specialists embedded in DevOps teams, or you can have cross-functional teams, or whatever other model works. But I think one of the things that have changed is simply the pace. Why are people adopting containers? Why are people going cloud-native? Because they want to be more agile. Agility is the name of the game. Everybody wants to be like Facebook, not in terms of lawsuits, etc., but in terms of how fast they can deploy new features and update their software. You've never seen an announcement by Facebook, hey, Facebook 4.0 just came out. It doesn't exist because it's continuously being updated. And enterprises are moving that way because all enterprises have become software companies, essentially. That's how they compete. It doesn't matter if they're insurance companies, airlines, government agencies, they all compete using software. If you want to make yourself more agile, speed is the name of the game here, and security has to adjust to that. And I think that's the main driver that makes this round somewhat different. So it's not just about cost efficiency or flexibility, elasticity, as the way the VM-based cloud is. It's really about speed, and we're talking about at least a factor, if not two, of magnitude, which is very significant. You know, people have moved from updating their stuff 2-4 times a year to doing it every week or twice a week. It's a very significant change. Security has to catch up, and you cannot do that by sitting close to the CISO's office and throwing out mandates to people, expecting them to follow them, because they won't. You have to get the insight on what is feasible at which stage and provide the tooling to do that.
But how do we get management to buy in? We tell developers, break it, fix it, play with it, do what you want. We need speed. The business units say, if you don't give me speed, I'm going to go out to the cloud and I don't care who wrote the app. If it does what my users want, we're going to use it and we don't care if that's sensitive corporate data. Management sitting still in its ivory tower and going, oh my God, we don't understand this. We don't know what to do. How do we change their perception? How do we change their mindset? And how do we get them to buy in to what they want the business to do, but actually they'd almost seem to be doing their best to stop the business doing it?
I guess the good news or bad news, depending on your perspective, but the good news here is that both the multi-cloud or cloud strategies in general and security and privacy issues have all become boardroom topics. And I'm not just saying that. I actually spoke to some people who are on the board of several major companies, and they tell me that this is true. We are talking about two issues that are seemingly conflicting, but they are dealt with at the same level. which is the most senior level. Again, it goes back to making security part of the solution, not part of the problem. There are really good news, and that is that we think that in the cloud-native era, you can do security in a much better way than before. If you look at IT security in general today, you go to RSA on any of those events, you see a glut of tools, all highly specialized, very niche, and security teams that are drowning in data, finding it very hard to prioritize, chasing threats, and suffering from a chronic and unresolvable lack of skills shortage. People, basically. Not that the people are not skilled, they are, but there aren't enough of them. One of the ways, again, if you look at it at a macro level, is if you co-opt developers to do some of your work, that's a win-win because there are many more developers in the world than security people, and they make code faster than security people can secure it. That's one piece of the puzzle. But another piece of the puzzle is that we're actually getting into a type of application that is much easier to secure from the start. We're not talking about bolting on security. We're talking about building security into the application, into its architecture, and into the fact that it's using the immutability concept, meaning that once you deploy a container and that container is running, nobody touches that container. There is no patching. There's no updating. The only way to update a container is to rebuild the image and deploy a fresh container replacing the old container. This gives you, from a security standpoint, it gives you a great tool because it's very easy to detect anomalies. It's very easy to understand when something went wrong, because if your container changed, then something went wrong. It's very clear cut. There is no patching. So if I now see a container and I know that that container came from a certain image, and I see a change in that container compared to what the original image was, I know that that container cannot be legitimate now. Someone changed something, someone injected a new executable, changed privileges, added files, all of these things, not good. So I can very easily highlight and alert on and stop suspicious activity with almost zero false positives in this respect. And so that makes our life a lot easier. My promise to security guys is this is not just another layer or another tool that plugs a hole in the vast mesh of tools that you have, but also the fact that it actually replaces a lot of them and gives you something that's better. Because it's not based on signatures, it's not based on chasing threats, on correlating events across the globe like EDR vendors do. It's based on a very simple understanding of what the application should be doing and whitelisting that.
Earlier this year, I watched one of your team, Liz Rice, give a presentation called Running with Scissors. She live demonstrated just how easy it is to break out of a container and cause a problem. A couple of weeks ago, we saw our first really serious challenge with containers. Picked up by Red Hat, very quickly pushed around, patch issued. But we're already seeing a lag in terms of identified, lots of press, lots of talk about it, but people not quite patching as fast as they can. On the other side of that coin, I see more talked about security now with containers than at a comparable time in any other technology shift in the last 35 years that I've been in the industry. How do we begin to close that gap between announcements and fix? Because once again, we come back to the fact it only takes one unpatched container out of tens of thousands to be that entry point.
First of all, for that vulnerability, you're referring to the severe Kubernetes vulnerability that was found. It was actually patched and publicized within about a month, which is fast. I used to work for a database security company, and in the database security world, there were vulnerabilities that were disclosed to Oracle, took a year to patch, and then went public with it, but then it took another year sometimes for customers to actually patch their systems. Why? Because you have these transactional databases that are running, and there's like a maintenance window on New Year's Eve, and that's it. Hopefully, we're in a very different ballgame now. Kubernetes can be updated with very little downtime. And certainly, all the people running in the cloud, EKS, AKS, GKE, and so forth, they get that done for them by the cloud providers. So we are in a better situation already. I would say there is a knowledge gap still today. There is a lot of ignorance out there that we need to address. That Running with Scissors talk that Liz did, which I remember very vividly, was more really about educating DevOps people and security people, just to tell them that don't count on the next layer of security to stop whatever screw-up you did. So, because the gist of it, just to those of you who are not familiar with the talk, is that if you, for example, create images that can run as root, even if you have a pod security policy in your cluster, there are vulnerabilities that can be used to escalate privileges on a pod that had that container in it and take over your cluster, even though you had a security policy in your cluster. The buck stops here, as they say, and you have to do your part in securing whatever it is you're doing at that relevant stage, whether it's building an image, which is basic hygiene, and that's where a lot of our customers and other companies in the industry are starting, which is absolutely a sensible place to start because known vulnerabilities are leaving the door open. So you want to take care of that. And then the fancier stuff you can do later in terms of securing your cluster, monitoring, a real-time response, and so forth, that comes with maturity. But to add one more aspect to your question, something that also is fundamentally different between the container movement, if you will, and the cloud native movement to what happened with VMs is that VMs were led by VMware, a commercial company, and some of the open source options came later. Containers are led by an open source community. And so there is a lot more openness, I feel, and a lot more ability to discover what's wrong and fix it quickly than we had previously. And I think that's a huge plus.
We're at that crux point now. We're moving from test and dev into production. If any of the numbers out there are even vaguely right, we're going to see a huge acceleration over the next 12, 15, 18 months. From your perspective, what worries you the most about that?
It's these huge blind spots that companies have around their deployments. Also in the open source community, the blame is partly there as well, but there is a mindset with some people that they think that, oh, because this is DevOps and because we develop these tools and we know what we're doing, don't worry about security, we'll take care of it. That's obviously not going to work. There has never, ever, in the history of whatever, 40-year history of enterprise IT, there has never been any infrastructure or application suite or anything like that that secured itself. Even when Microsoft came out with Windows Defender, that did not kill the business for Trend Micro and McAfee and Symantec, antiviruses and anti-malware on PCs. Same with Oracle and databases, same with everything you can think about. Don't expect Kubernetes or Docker or any of those open source projects to secure themselves. Yes, they provide a lot of tooling for security. There are a lot of options for making them more secure, but it's entirely up to you how you use them. There are best practices and tools out there like the CIS benchmark for Kubernetes and for Docker that we just got certified for. There's a lot of best practices you can read about and so forth. But ultimately, you need to use things that are secure by default, that are manageable at the scale that you need to manage them. A lot of the platform vendors out there say that. Amazon, for example, there's a shared responsibility model. They tell you out front, they did it at the event as well. You cannot expect us to take care of everything for you. There's a shared responsibility model. We do this, you do that. You're responsible for your own containers. We're not looking at your containers. If you bring us bad containers and they have vulnerabilities in them and someone attacks your application because of that, that's your problem, not ours. People need to understand that, not just in the cloud, but generally. The platform will only provide you security to secure itself and certain aspects of things like RBAC or basic hygiene. They will not protect you against attacks. You have to do more in order to secure that. And that is a message that we repeat to both DevOps teams that we talk to, as well as security people who don't know enough about Kubernetes at the moment, but are learning. We hope that will work.
I live in hope that one day enterprises will take responsibility for their own mess.
Yes.
Rani, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian.